Okay, good morning. We are holding in the midst of Perek Ches, in the middle of Perek Ches, and we are holding on over here. Let me get the page. The page is page Yud Gimel, chapter 8. And we're holding by Val Dvarim B'Telem B'Heter. Okay. So we're holding like this. He's talking over here about the effects of a person coming into contact with the klipa, the unholy, and what kind of negative effect that has on the soul. And he explained that even, let's say, for instance, in eating, if a person eats kosher food, but they're not at the moment of their eating, of the consumption of the food, they're not thinking about that there's any higher intent, higher purpose to their eating, then the food is in a klipa state, or the person is now living in a state of what we really call a state of a lie, because any klipa is just a deception, a lie. As mentioned many times, klipa is not, its whole metzias, its whole existence is lying. It hides the truth that there's none but Hashem. So at this moment, the person has forgotten that and is living in that lie. So that's causing a contamination of his neshama. Even if a few minutes or there right thereafter, he begins to return to the service of Hashem and thereby uses the energy for good purposes. So he does elevate the food into a holy state. Nevertheless, he says, it still causes a certain stain on his body, and the body needs a purification because it instantly, he says, becomes, instantly it becomes a part of his body. And at that time, it wasn't elevated yet to holiness. So that's why it leaves a stain of klipa. And for this, he explains that the body will need a purification called chibut akever, cleansing of that is in the grave, that the angels come down and it's some kind of painful experience to the body. And the point of it is, it's cleansing. There are no punishments from God just to get back at the person. Every kind of purification is a purification, meaning it's a purification in order that the body too of a Jew is holy. It needs to be resurrected. So if it got stained with the stain of klipa, it needs to come off. However, very important to note that that kind of cleansing only helps for the stain that comes on the body as a result of a person eating kosher food not with holy intentions, for the enjoyments of the world of the physical. However, if a person ate non-kosher, then this kind of a pure purification isn't sufficient to cleanse. Because the chibut hakever is kind of like dusting something, like a garment that gets dusted. So you can remove that dust by shaking it off. If there is a deeper stain, then it needs chemicals and all the kinds of cleansing. It's not good enough. You can't just shake it off. Klipas noiga is a klipa that is removable by the chibut hakever. That's what he says, that the chibut hakever process, the purgatory of the grave, is a purgatory that is meant just to cleanse the body from its enjoyments in the physical world that it had benefited. And he explained, besides Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rebbe, who never had any benefit from Gashmias, any physical and delight and enjoyment, he didn't need this. He didn't need this this purification. Okay. Now we're holding. So I guess the only way for a person to avoid this painful experience is to eat L'Shem Shemayim all his life. And I guess, of course, tshuva can help. If a person does tshuva, just like tshuva can clean their neshama, tshuva can help for this too, to clean their body. But the way to avoid it, L'chatchila, originally, is to abstain from indulging, or not even indulging, even eating the bare minimum, but a person should always have a higher intention to think. It's all about awareness. It's all about focus. And again, I can overestimate the importance of davening in the morning, because the davening in the morning is what places the person in the right mindset for the day. And davening has to be done with a lot of focus and meditation, and it's worth it to spend time in a lengthy davening in the morning so that we really, really deeply inculcate, I think that word is pronounced, yeah. Whatever. To deeply absorb in one's mind and in consciousness, to etch it in our deeply for the entire day, then God is my creator, responsible for my existence every moment of my day, and I have to be his servant every moment. So then even if you do enjoy the food, we said last week, probably, as mashma in most places, even if you do enjoy the food, you can't help enjoying it, it's still okay, because as long as the person's main intention is to serve Hashem, he elevates the food from klipa to kedusha, and there is no need for chibut akever, for the purgatory of the grave. Now he continues. Val dvarim betelim beheter. Now another area, which is... Now, I just want to make an introduction that this perek that we're learning over here, and I mentioned this last time too, but again, I have to say it today. Page Yud Gimel, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 lines from the top. The line begins with the word Yamav, and we're holding by Val Dvarim Betelim. So the thing is that this Tanya is the most Musar Diga perek in the entire book. So not meant to scare anybody, but it is a little... It is a little harsh. Val dvarim betelim. It's interesting that the musar that there is in Chassidus is so much tougher than the musar there is in musar books. So it's like on all sides, it picks you up to the highest. And when you need a little bit of a bang down, Chassidus gives it lays it out all the way. Okay, val dvarim betelim beheter. Now another aspect that causes that is again. A thing that people are very, very susceptible to falling into is frivolous and frivolous speech, idle chatter. Dvarim b'teilim. You know, a person has to be careful. Although, just like all of our food and all of our activities has to be serving God, so all of our speech has to be. So every conversation has to have some kind of element of a higher purpose to it. I'm speaking these words for a reason. So I'm serving Hashem. So of course, you're supposed to use your mouth and your words to utter words of Torah and words of prayer and brachas. That's kedusha. Those are holy words. But then there is, and then there is forbidden words, things that you're not allowed to speak, which are sinful. And that is shalish klipas atmeyas. A person says lashon hara, a person hurts someone else, makes fun of someone, hurtful words, things like that, or speaks in a non-clean way, that is the three impure klipas. That's sinful. But over here we're talking about things that are there's no avera to them, but they're just words that don't have any spiritual godly content. So the dvarim betelim. So we're going to see if there are words that you need to speak in order to for your life. And you're seeing that's klipa. If a person is speaking about the weather, it's klipa. It's part of the unholy, unless you're doing it, and you can use it for holiness, because if you're discussing the weather in order to get into a conversation for someone, and to have, and then to maybe you want to affect this person to bring them to become friendlier, and thereby help them come a little closer to your service of Hashem, or you want to just help them in their life, whatever it is they need help. So this is in order to do a mitzvah. So then it's holy, or anything like that. If a person is engaging in conversation that he needs for his business in order to make a living. So again, that depends on why you're making, what is your intention in making a living. If you're earning, you're thinking about earning a living so that you can serve Hashem, so again, you're elevating, you're adding an element of kedusha to those words, and thereby elevating it. So it's the same like food. However, the idea is that the cleansing of it is different than the cleansing of food. If you're not doing it that way, and if a person is just speaking words that are they're called idle chatter, they're not useful, and they're not adding anything to one's avodas Hashem, to one's service of God. So then this is also part of the klip. So he says, "Valdvarim betelim," and on idle chatter, "beheter," however, in a manner when it is not a sin. Idle chatter is usually a sin, because the very fact that you're speaking words that are not holy, that is already a sin. It's different than eating. Eating, if a person is eating and they're not eating a mitzvah meal, like Shabbos, or they're not eating but they're eating just to sustain themselves, it's not a sin. It's klipa. It's unholy, but it's also not sinful. There's no avera in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat to sustain your body. You're supposed to eat like a glutton. Oh, that's already kadoshim to you. But stam, you're eating. There's no avera to it. However, for a person who is speaking words that are not for any benefit, just plain like that, that is sinful in most cases. Why? Not because of what it is, but because of what it's not. Because they should be at this very moment. It's because they should be at this very moment studying Torah. Because a person has a mitzvah to study Torah all day long. Now, of course, this applies only to men. Men have a mitzvah to study Torah every moment. A woman has a mitzvah. She studies Torah, but she's not commanded to study Torah every minute. So, valdvarim betelim beheter. So that's why he says, when a person has idle chatter in a permissible case, how can it be permissible to have idle chatter? So he says, kegoin, for example, amaretz, someone is an ignorant person, she'eina yachol lilmoid, who doesn't have the ability to learn. So a person who could study, so every spare moment, you're supposed to study. Today we don't even have the excuse for most people that they don't have a book, because they have a iPhone or one of these other gadgets and devices that has, and they can load it up with all kinds of svarim and everything, and they always have available books to study. So a person is kagan, but an ama aretz, he says, she'ena yachal ilmoid, an ignorant person who doesn't know how to learn. So you can't demand of a person who doesn't have the capability. He can't study. So that in that case, it's called permissible dvarim b'teilim, because he's not being over on the dibartabam speaking them. He's going to be charged of why he didn't put in an effort to learn how to learn. Okay, that's a different cheshbon. But in the present moment, if he doesn't know how to learn, you can't expect of him to be studying Torah. But every person who has the ability to study Torah and there and doesn't and engages in frivolous, empty conversation and speech, so that is a sin. But he's talking in a case, he's trying to look at the tumah of the, and once it's a sin, then it's the three impure klipas. And the three impure klipas need, as we're going to see soon, need the cleansing of Gehenim in order to remove that kind of a tumah, that kind of impurity. He, however, wants to address the element of klipas noga, the element of the klipa, which is not the sinful klipa, the translucent klipa, the klipas noga that has the glowing shell, as it pertains to the world of speech. As it pertains to the world of food, it's when a person eats kosher food without a higher intention. So here he's speaking about the same thing. Kosher speech, it's not sinful speech, but it's also lacking a holiness. So in that case, similar to kosher food, needs to be purified. Over here too, it also needs to be purified. However, there is a difference. By food, what is primarily impacted is the body. So the body needs purification, and that's why it gets chibut akever, the purgatory of the grave. For idle chatter, it's more of a act that doesn't affect so much the body, it affects more the soul, because speech is an exercise of the spirit more than it is an exercise of the material, of the physical. Val, as he says, she'en yochlem. So then, tzarech letaher nafshay, a person needs to purify his soul, mitum mezu de klipazu, from this tumah, from this impurity, from this klipa, from this shell, al yedei, through gilgula bekafakela. It's through the soul being rolled around in the hollow of the sling. As stated in the Zohar, in Parshas B'Shalach Daf Nun Tes. Over there he speaks about that Kaf HaKela, the hollow of the sling, is a punishment or a purification process that is given for a person for Dvarim B'Telem, for a person who is, for all speech that all chatter or speech that a person spoke that is not sinful at all, it was just, but there was nothing holy about it. And they were not, again, they're not, there's nothing sinful at both, either because of the content of it, it wasn't a sinful words, or also because of the lack of content, that they're not guilty of lack of limud Torah. Nevertheless, the mere fact that it's not godly, it affects the neshama, because the neshama is a godly being, and the neshama has to enter into a godly environment. Words are never lost. Here's the thing, it's not like you speak words and the words disappear. The words, here's the thing, because every conversation, every word that a person uttered, he extends energy of his soul into it. The soul is eternal. That means that the words are eternal. So those words cling to the soul. The soul needs to be purified from it, because without it, now let's just get this. Here's the thing. When the neshama comes into Gan Eden, it's in a godly environment. It needs to receive a Hashem's light into the neshama. The problem is that if it has these unholy speech attached to it, which it can't rid itself on its own, once it leaves, down here it can rid itself by doing tshuva. But up there, the soul as it is, that's how it leaves. It is helpless to fix itself. The only way it can be fixed is by assistance from above. So when it enters into Gan Eden, the problem is that it's going to have static. When it wants to hear the revelations of godliness, it's going to be like a radio that has a bad connection, because the just like when you're going into a parking lot with your radio or something like that, the walls that don't allow the waves, the radio waves to reach, to be picked up because of these blockages and interference, the soul comes along with walls that will not allow the neshama. And that is a very big rachmanis for the soul. So it is to the benefit of the neshama to get rid of those walls that it created. Every conversation that it had, which content wasn't godly, is another veil and a blockage to holiness. So all those conversations have to be wiped off from the neshama. However, being that it was permissible, so it doesn't leave a deep, deep, deep stain on the neshama doesn't have to go to what's called Gehenim, which is a place where you get cleansing from deep scars, deep, deep stains. The neshama just needs to be shooken off like dust that accumulated, just like the body needed to be shooken from the tum of klipas noga that affects the body. The neshama needs a cleansing of this dust. How does it get this cleansing? So there's something called the hollow of the sling. What's the hollow of the sling? So the Gemara comes from a pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'ha'isa nefesh adoni truda b'tzreid achayim." It says David HaMelech says that someone said to David HaMelech that the soul of my master is going to be wrapped up in the wrapping of life. That means in the holiness of Gan Eden and so forth. Ves nefesh oyvecha, and the soul of your enemy, yikla'ena, is going to be slung or bekafakela in the hollow of the sling. That's the pasuk. The Gemara says, what is this kafakela? So the Gemara describes that it has something like this, that there are two angels that stand on the two edges of the universe, and they play football with the soul, which means they throw the soul back and forth. And this is supposed to be a very painful experience. Chassidus explains, what is the experience of this kafakela? What does it mean they stand on one end of the world and the other end of the world, and they toss the soul back and forth? And that it means like this. The soul is entering into Gan Eden, and therefore over there it experiences, or into the higher realms, at the end of Gan Eden yet. It can't go to Gan Eden yet until it gets de-dusted or gets dusted from its dust. But however, what the neshama needs is it goes up to heaven, and it experiences the truth, the reality of spirituality, of holiness, and of godliness. And it has, of course, a very, very strong pull to the light, to the bliss and the ecstasy of that world. But as soon as it's ready to connect to it, they take the soul and they throw the soul back down into this world. Meaning to say, the soul remains a bodiless soul, but it begins to re-experience, sadly, in its imagination, all the thoughts and words, the conversations that it had, and the speech and the words that it had while it was inhabiting earth, are re-enter, come back into the neshama in a very vivid way. So the soul suddenly starts experiencing itself as it is, as if it's back in a body again. But now it knows how ludicrous it is. Now it knows what kind of stupidity it is, that it has these desires and wants, and it spoke about such stupidities. and it can't free itself from it. And it being that it was so close to truth, and now it gets, and that's like, it's called, that's like laughing from the soul. Like how silly and ridiculous have you been that you were involved with such stupidity. And the soul itself is trapped. It wants to not think this, but it can't get out of those thoughts. And when it maybe is getting comfortable enough in this situation to begin to forget the higher reality and to begin to think that this is real, and it goes back into the conversations, they pick the soul back up to the reality of heaven, to the truth of godliness, and then again, so it's in the world of truth again. So it experiences deep regret and agony about the fact how ridiculous I was there. I was able to think those imaginary things that aren't real. And when it gets back to heaven again, and it's beginning to get close to that, they cast the soul back into its pleasures and into its conversations and into its thoughts and empty hollow that it has over here. It's a very, 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 very painful experience. This is back and forth and back and forth. By doing this, the pain that the soul experiences of it rejects it. It spits it out. And by it spitting it out, it disconnects itself from it. And now it can go to Gan Eden. This is, as explained, I once heard a mashal from Rabbi Jacobson in his Shira Mantanya gave an explanation to this, from that we see this even in today's world, psychotherapy, of some kind of process which people do, which a therapist. If a person, for instance, when he was a young child, had a certain kind of an abuse, whatever abuse it was, an abuse that involves intimacy or any kind of other abuse, that caused deep scars on the person. So now when they get older, and they might have forgotten it, but it's there deeply etched in their being. And now when they need to forge relationships, they get married and so forth, and they can't, because they can't experience an intimacy, they can't be vulnerable, they can't be open, they can't, because of various different abuse that they got when they were a child. So they can't go on with their life. They can't be so one of the things that a therapist would do is they would go to a therapist, and the therapist will, maybe through hypnosis or whatever it is, bring them back to that very, very painful experiences that they had when they were a child. Now, even though it's horrible, it's literally torture, because you're taking back the person to that place, but they need to confront it. When they come back and confront those moments, and they can now, with the maturity of their mind at this point, fully deal with it and reject it, so then they can become out of it and then face their life now, and they've removed those scars. But if they don't and they just keep it buried, it will interfere. It won't allow them to be in a normal relationship. The same is with the neshama when it goes to Gan Eden. The neshama can't come. It comes with its scars. In this world, leaves imprints. It leaves its mark on the neshama. So the neshama needs to purify itself from that. So for that reason, it has to go through this process of kafakela, which is painful for the neshama. So that's what he says. This is all if it's aval, he says. But this is only for permissible speech. Speech that didn't have any avera. It wasn't sinful. And also, there wasn't an avera because of bittul Torah. Because this person didn't have to, at this moment, study Torah. Aval, however, lidiburim asurim, if it's forbidden speech, kemoi, litzan is like scoffing, for lashon hara and lashon hara, gossip and evil talk, ukiyotzebem, and the like, shehein mesholish klipis atmeis legamri, which they are of a lower form of impurity from the three impure klipis completely, ein kafakele levadoi moyel letahar laharitimosai. The hollow of the sling itself is not enough to purify and to remove the defilement mahanefesh from the soul. This isn't sufficient enough. In other words, it seems like there is an element of the hollow of the sling that is needed even for this too, to shake the soul off from these words. But that isn't enough, because the tumma is of a lower kind of a tumma, and they scar the soul in a deeper and a more permanent way. The soul has to descend into Gehenim to purify, into purgatory, in order to cause what we call a deep cleansing, to get this shmutz out from the inside of the soul. And the same is also Misha Efshaloi Lasik B'Torah, a person who has the ability, the capabilities to study Torah, and involves himself in engages in frivolous and idle chatter, there too, even though their chatter itself was permissible, they weren't speaking things that were forbidden, but since there involves bittul Torah, which they have an obligation every minute of their free time to study Torah, and they're not studying Torah, ein kafa kela levado imoyo lanafshoi. The hollow of the sling itself isn't sufficient for the soul, lamarka, to purge it, ulezachacha, and to cause the soul to sparkle, to cleanse it, rak oinchem chamurim, rather, very, very harsh punishments, shemanishem al bitul toire bepratis, that are administrated to, for the sin of bitul Torah, which is the lack of Torah study, bepratis specifically. Which means this avera of bittul Torah is considered one of the biggest sins, and that's why it has a whole set of punishment that goes far beyond all other punishment that there is for other sins. Milvad oynesh haklali l'chol bittul mitzvah saseh, besides the more general punishment for every bittul, every lack of performance of a positive commandment, machmas atzlus, which comes out as a result of laziness, begehanim shel sheleg, in the purgatory of snow. As stated elsewhere, what he's saying over here is like this: when a person speaks sinful words, like we said, lashon hara, and so forth, they need purgatory to cleanse their soul. So they will need two things: they need kafa kele because of the fact that it was useless words. For that, they need kafa kele. Besides that, to take away the sin of it, the klipa shalosh klipas atmeis, they need gehenna. However, what kind of Gehenna do they get? He doesn't mention it over here. Generally, we know Gehenna, when we think of purgatory, we think of a purgatory of fire. I'm not talking about a physical fire, but it is fire that is painful for the soul, 70 times even stronger than a 60 times stronger, as I think the Gemara says, than the fire, than physical fire. It's like getting a physical burn is the emotional pain from that kind, from Gehenna. Okay? That's fire. The reason why they get a Gehenna of fire is because what causes a person to engage in sinful words, it's their anger, their passion, unholy passion, arrogance, and so forth, which are all fire elements in them. Since they sinned with their fire element of their soul, it's so they need to be cleansed by the fire of Gehenna to remove that fire impurity that came from the fire, from their overheatedness in klipa and unholiness. Now, if a person, however, sinful words are not because they're content of the words, but because it's lacking in the performance of the mitzvah. Meaning it's not because of the avera, because the words are bad, but because it's not that we should have been studying Torah, and that's why the words are sinful. So here he says they're going to require three elements for their cleansing. Three elements. Number one is kafakela, which is given for all kind of, which is generally removing words from the soul. The soul needs to be shaken off from words that were not of godly content, of holy content. That's number one. Now, for the fact that it was sinful, which means they didn't study Torah, there is two elements to that. Number one, there is the general idea that they did not do a mitzvah. They had an obligation to do a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah that a person is obligated every moment to do? The moment, tzedakah is not every moment. If you meet a poor person, you're obligated to give tzedakah. But if there's no poor person around, you're alone, what's your mitzvah? There is a constant mitzvah, studying Torah. Every time a person is negligent and does not do a mitzvah that they're supposed to, there is a gehenna for that, a purgatory for that. What kind of purgatory? It's not a purgatory of fire, it's a purgatory of snow. Why is it a purgatory of snow? Because what causes a person not to do a mitzvah? It comes from a coldness, because they're of apathy, because of a lack of fervor, a lack of excitement, a lack of, because it's a different Yetzirah. There's a Yetzirah that heats a person up in the unholy way. And so it's a Yetzirah that cools a person up and causes the person not to do what they're supposed to be doing. That's coldness. So that's why they need, in order to cleanse that, what's called a Gehenim Shel Sheleg. That would be the same, however, kind of cleansing that would come for any lack of a mitzvah. The lack of not giving tzedakah when you're supposed to give tzedakah. The lack of a person, for instance, didn't put on tefillin. The person did not read. or the person did not read the Shema, or the like. If the person did not read the Shema or the like, so for that avera, it's a laziness, and that's why they need a Gehenna Shel Shelag, a Gehenna of snow. Now for Bittul Torah, for the lack of Torah study, being that Torah is not just a mitzvah, it's the crown of all mitzvahs, as we say in davening every day in the beginning, the Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. So besides for the ordinary punishment that comes for the lack of Torah study, there is an extra serious punishment, he doesn't say what they are, which is punished for lack of Torah study. Now what's strange is, if anybody was to say that this is being written in the primary book of Hasidus, where people generally had a take on that Hasidism did not demand Torah study and was lax in Torah study and put the emphasis in other things, I don't think there is any book in the world that describes the severity of a lack of Torah study with such, and I don't know, I can't say that because I haven't studied, but there's definitely from the fewer places that describe Bittul Torah in such a awesome way of what it is necessary for cleansing. So it's not something we have to be very careful with. That a yid should study Torah as much as they can. As we had said last time, the way to purify oneself and not have to get kafakela, doesn't say Gehenna, but kafakela is that all the spare time that a person has, they should be reviewing Mishnayos, saying, that's why it's very important that a person should memorize Torah, that they can always speak Torah whenever they can in their spare moments. Okay. V'chein, now he says, now, how about if someone doesn't waste his time by speaking frivolous and engaging in empty speech, but rather the person involves themselves in studying the secular studies? Person is learning various different sciences and disciplines and so forth. So this is not empty, frivolous, empty speech. You're learning something of content. So if a person is studying math, a person is studying biology or medicine or all these things, where do they stand in terms of, now, obviously, we're not dealing with if someone is learning something that the Torah forbids a person to learn. For example, you're not allowed to study the ways of idolatry. It's an avera. Al tifnu el ha'alilim. Do not go after the idols. So a person may not, I think a lot of people don't know this, is that you're not allowed to study the ways of the Indian cultures and so forth, where people visit museums many times of the Native Americans, and you look and you read and you watch their ceremonies, they have these videos and this and that, which is real idolatry. And it's not permissible for a person to research that. It's interesting. The Beis Din had a mitzvah to learn it, because the Beis Din had to know the ways of Avodah Zarah in order for them to be able to judge, to know if a person violated and served an idol. But for another person, it's forbidden for a person to learn that. And the same would be also to read, probably, unless you're doing anti-missionary work. So for a person to study other religions and other faiths, just to become Buddhism or whatever, and just to become knowledgeable in other things, it's not so simple. You have to ask a Rav if you're allowed to and in which circumstances you're allowed to. Generally, that's a forbidden, an avera. So an avera is an avera, but he's not talking about that. He's talking about things that there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, nothing wrong with it. That's the question. Is there nothing wrong with it? Things that generally we'd say is permissible because there is no sin in the thing itself. So he says, now, in the disciplines of the nations, of the Gelulim. Now, I think this was all because of the censor, as it says. It means Chachmas Ha'umais, in general, the sciences of the nations. Bechlal Dvarim B'teilim Yechashiv. Le'inyan Avin Bittul Torah. In as much as Torah study is concerned, it has the same quality and the same unholiness like frivolous speech would have. Just like idle chatter, words that are just meaningless. A person is talking about sports, politics, or whatever it is.
is considered sinful. Why is it considered sinful? Not because of what it is, but because of what it's lacking. Because in this time you should have been studying Torah, and you're not studying Torah. So the same is also if a person is studying. A person says, "Well, I'm not learning Narishkeit. I'm learning something of substance. I'm reading science and things like that. It's still considered. It's not Torah." So it has the same quality of Bittul Torah. And all the things that we said before that Bittul Torah contains applies also to a person who is studying these things. Kamasha Kasta Behilchas Talmud Torah, as stated in the laws of Talmud Torah. However, he says, meaning someone shouldn't think that just because this is more of an elegant kind of a thing, it's not empty hollowness, it's something of greater substance, that's why it is holier. It's not holier. And a person has a mitzvah, a dibar to bum, to study Torah, and not anything else besides Torah. Okay. However, he's going to say, now, v'oid zayis, yesera tumasa, shal chachmes u'umais oiv de gilulim, al tumas varen betel. Now he's going to add, and he says, in a certain way, a person's, the impurity, the defilement, that affects the soul, that comes from studying the secular studies, is in a certain way worse even than if a person would just speak narishkeit, empty and idle and elements that don't have that, are not intelligent talk, but just wasteful talk. There is something to it that is even worse, and that is as follows: in the effect that it has on the neshama. On our relationship with God. Why? He says like this. So when a person engages in idle chatter, they're, as we said earlier, they're affecting their neshama. How are they affecting their neshama? Because the words are words of klipa, the words of unholiness, and they're bringing unholiness onto their soul. However, the question is, which part of their soul are they defiling? Which part of the person is becoming soiled? When a person is speaking sports, politics, weather, or any other element of a narishkeit, of elements that don't have any content or any, so. The reason why is it affecting your neshama? The reason it's affecting your neshama is because even though what's stimulating the speech, what's causing the person to speech is their animal soul. Of course, the godly soul, our nefesh elokis, our neshama, is not interested in this conversation. Our godly soul, as we learned in the beginning of Tanya, is interested in one thing, of forging a bond with God through Torah and mitzvahs. So all speech and all thoughts are only holy. So which part of the person is stimulating this? It's coming from the animal soul. However, as we know, our godly soul is entangled in the animal soul. So wherever our animal soul goes, it drags along the nefesh elokis, the godly soul. Because they're invested one in each other. Now he says like this, which part of the animal soul is engaged in causing a person, is stimulated or involved in this conversation? Well, if the conversation is a conversation of emptiness that doesn't have, a person is joking around and speaking things that don't have much substance. So it's the emotional element in them, it's their emotion that is causing them to speak that is stimulating that conversation. Meaning there's no intellectual investment because the words aren't of intelligence. He's not using their mind, their emotions, their passion. They have a passion for sports, they have a passion for politics, they have a passion for humor, and they like speaking about cultural things. And again, nothing sinful about it, but just, so they're taking it's an exercise of their midos of their nefesh bahamas, the emotions of their animal soul, which generally is the emotion of passion and so forth, or he says, it's the wind in their animal soul, because remember we learned in the beginning of Tanya that everything is comprised of wind, fire, water, and earth. And the wind is what causes the person to like to enjoy empty conversations that don't bring to anything. So it's the wind element in them, in their emotional part of their animal soul that is stimulating and causing this conversation, is prompting the conversation. So, since it's the emotional element in their animal soul that's stimulating this, which part of their godly soul is getting soiled? It's the emotional element of their neshama that is invested in the emotions of the animal soul. That is being affected and becoming defiled. However, their head is not invested there because they're not engaging their mind. So at least the mind of their godly soul remains pure, innocent, and holy, and is not part of it. However, if what they're speaking and what they're involving themselves and what they're immersing themselves is the study of the sciences, this already requires the involvement of brain activity, of the intelligence of the mind. So as they're immersing their animal soul's mind, the nefesh of klipa is operating with its intelligence in the unholy, it's taking along involuntarily, not because the godly soul wants to, but the godly soul against its will, is its brain power, its intelligence is also getting soiled in that shmutz. So for instance, if a person is running outside and it's muddy, so they'll get their shoes dirty. If it's very, very muddy, so they'll get their pants dirty too, and the lower part, but at least their head remains clean. But if they decide to run upside down on their hands, so they'll get their head dirty. And getting your head dirty is far worse than getting your feet dirty. Similar to that is what he's saying over here. When a person is getting their the tumma that is being generated by stam, empty, hollow speech is the emotional element of that. What kind of impact does it have? Let's see a minute. What kind of impact does dvarim betelim, idle chatter, or unholy conversations have on a person? Is that it's when the infection infects their godly soul, it affects the emotions of the godly soul, thereby making it so much harder for them to experience holy emotions. See, if the nefesh elikis's midos get soiled with the tumma of klipa, then the emotions are affected, that they don't have the ability to operate anymore because it gets clogged with klipa. So therefore what happens is, even when they study and they learn, or they meditate on the beauty of God and nature or whatever it is, or they study chassidus or whatever it is that they learn, and they meditate on godly things, they understand it in their mind, but their heart doesn't respond. Prayer gets dry and lacking of fervor and excitement because their heart has become so soiled with klipa. Okay? So that's the effect. However, it's called timtum halev, the clogging of the heart, which is a terrible thing. But much, much, much worse than that is the clogging of the mind. If a person studies, immerses himself in secular pursuits and secular sciences, so what that will cause is a defilement of their mind. And when the mind gets defiled, it means that they lose their ability to perceive and understand kedusha, understand holiness. It becomes a clogging of the mind. They lose their interest. In other words, you're learning and you're studying things, it just doesn't go into their head. It makes it far more difficult for them to absorb, for this person to absorb concepts of holiness. However, I know he's being very harsh on it, he's going to explain that there are ways that it's kosher. Not only is it kosher, but actually it's possible for a person to study these sciences and accomplish something very, very huge and something very great by doing it. However, a lot of precaution needs to be taken on how it should be done, as he's going to explain. First, what we're studying now is he's explaining the damage that it could be done if it's not done in the right way, as he says. So let's read this over one more time. He says, it's the tumma, the oid zeis, and more than this, yesera, it is worse, tumasa, the tumma, the defilement that comes from shalchachmais umais oiv de galulim, from the study of the sciences of the nations, al tumas dvarim betelim, on the defilement of frivolous speech or empty speech, she'ein noy malbish umetame, because he's not in clothing and therefore defiling rak hamidois, only the emotional element miyesoid haruach hakodesh, from the element, from the holy wind, from the holy element of ruach, of wind, shebenafshei lekis, that's in his godly soul, that is enclosed in the unholy wind of the animal soul. Bitumas klipas noiga, with the tumma, with the defilement of the klipas noga, of the klipa, of the glowing shell, shebedvarim betelim, that is in these empty speech, in this frivolous speech. Haboim, because they come, miyisoida ruach hara, they come from the element of wind, of the evil wind, of the negative wind, shebeklipa zu, which is in this klipa, shebenafshe bahamas. Because again, the godly soul and the animal soul are aligned one with each other. So whichever element of your neshama, of your animal soul that is active and is involving itself in the unholiness of klipa, it's equivalent to that. That very same element in the godly soul is being drawn, taking along with it. Kedaliel, as mentioned earlier, v'loy b'chinas chabad shebenafshoy, but they're not taking the intellect, the chachma bin adas, the intelligence of their intellectual faculties of their neshama, ma'achar shem divrishtus, because there are words of shtus, because there are words of stupidity, ubayrais and of an ignorant nature, shagam hashoitim v'amaratzim yochayim ladabiken, because even a imbecile or an ignorant person that doesn't have much even someone who's not sophisticated in any way can speak sports and can speak or any other kind of narishkeit or empty things. Mash enkein b'chochmais u'umais oiv de gelulim, which isn't the case when a person is studying the chachma, the sciences of the nations. So then, so then he's enclosing a deeper and much higher element in his neshama, and therefore defiling the head, the intellect of his godly soul, bitumas klipas noiga, with the tuma of klipas noga, and that kind of tuma is very bad. Shabachachmas elu, that is in these disciplines and in these sciences. Okay, and now, what does it do to the person? We said before, it clogs the person's mind, and it makes it so much harder for holy ideas, holy concepts to register and be understood in the right way in their seichel, or at least to stick in their mind. Another thing that it does, it says, another damage that Chassidus and other Maimarim and other discourses that follow explains it does, is that the nature of the nations, of sciences of the nations, is that they make the person be very full of themselves, very proud and very arrogant. People that are intellectuals generally become very arrogant in their opinions and their understanding. The chachma of kedusha has a complete opposite effect. Holy wisdom brings nullification, brings a surrender, brings humility to a person. Unholy wisdom causes arrogance. And what happens is, a person who studies secular sciences, it creates a strong yeshus, a strong sense of self and self-importance by that person, and that even when they study Torah, the Torah that they study also causes an inflation of ego. Instead of a humility, it causes them to become so much more important in their own eyes, which is the extreme, which places a person in the most ungodly estate, when a person is in a state of pride and so forth. And this is caused by the study of these things. He's going to say now, however, that there is a manner in which they could be made holy, however, in order to explain one more point, and that is, how bad can it be? After all, it is, we're dealing with wisdom. We're dealing with concepts of seichel, of intelligence. So it's, after all, it's chachma. So he says, he wants to explain where that chachma comes from. Where it really comes from is like this. All wisdom, all sciences, all disciplines, their root is in holiness. Because everything is rooted in holiness. Chachma de kedusha, the element of holiness, the wisdom of holiness, is the root for everything. However, it's like this. As he says, let's read these words. Shabachachmas elu, that is these chachma, shanaflu shama, that have fallen there, b'shvira sakelim, through the shattering of the vessels, mipchenes acharayim shel chachma de kedusha, kiyudua liyodechein, that have fallen there from the back, from the hind, of the holy element of wisdom, as it is known to those who know part of the Torah. What he's saying is like this, that how is there bechlal wisdom, worldly wisdom? Where is its source? Its source is these. Every science and every discipline has sparks of holiness that are coming from the holy intelligence, from Chachma de Kedusha. However, these are sparks that have fallen in the process of what we call Shviras HaKelim. They have shattered and fallen. Just like we spoke many times, that the taste that there is, the pleasures that there are in physical things, their root is pleasure, holy pleasure. But there is a process of shattering of vessels which cause these sparks to fall down low. So too, there is all elements of wisdom that there are in the world are all taken from holiness, but they are, in order to show how far they are, is that they couldn't even evolve step by step by step by step by step because they're so inferior and so much lower from the Chachma of Kedusha that they had to be, the way it can come about was through what we call a shattering of the vessels. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. It has fallen. And also, not only has it fallen, but even before it fell, where is its origins? It's in the back of the Chachma, the Kedusha. It's the very most external element of holy wisdom that has collapsed and has fallen. So these are really very, very, very tiny little fragments of wisdom in compared to the wisdom that there is in the realms of Kedusha and holiness. So that is why it's true. It has an element of something to it, but it's way, 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 endlessly and endlessly inferior and nothing in compared to the Chachma that there is in Kedusha. However, as we're going to see, it does have a utility for Kedusha, but we're going to leave that for next week. Just to give a brief, just one little thing, he says people who study it for Parnassa reasons, in order that they should be able to make a living, and that's their whole intention in studying it, so that they should be able to have a better profession, so they can later have a better Parnassa and enables them to serve Hashem better. Or, he says, even a higher level, people who know how to use those sciences themselves for Avodas Hashem. Then these people elevate it, and not only do they elevate it, they have a mitzvah to do so, but those are only very, very few selected individuals who have the ability, and we're going to see it next week, people who have very high neshamas, who have the ability to deal with something so dangerous, something so toxic. Because people who don't have the ability to do so, and they get involved in this, it can cause very, 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 very great damage to their relationship with Hashem, to their neshama. So the best we can to keep away is better. Okay, we'll learn about it next week. Bez Hashem. Okay. Everybody have a Shavua Tov.